Hello and welcome to Chicago Business Podcast, Episode 2. Very excited to welcome Dr. Jeff Brown from University of Illinois, where he is the Dean of Business. Again, purpose of the discussion is to provide a little bit of education as well as entertainment by bringing in prominent business executives from our community, where we discuss a little bit about their background as well as what they're focused on, and really how innovation is changing their work. So thank you very much for joining. If you like what you see, please subscribe, leave comments, give me a thumbs up. We're very interested in feedback. So thank you very much. Without further ado, let's get the episode started.
Hey, Dean Brown.
Hi, Drew.
Nice to have you here. You're really hosting me, which is nice. Made the trip down, so I appreciate you making the nice accommodations we have here available.
Yeah,
so
we're happy to do it. These are the studios that we use for our really innovative online education work, including our IMBA and some other programs.
Yeah, well. We'll get into that because those are really exciting. I know there's been a lot of innovation there that the university's been doing. But before we get into too much, let's start with a little bit of an icebreaker.
You bet.
And the this is the second recording of Chicago Business Podcast, and we I'm still deciding if I put this one out first or not. You have a in your role and also in the communications that we've had up until now, you kind of have a special place in my heart. As I had mentioned to you, my father was dean of business at California State University Chico for quite some time, and then ran Marshall's Graduate School of Business as well. So he passed 6.5 years ago, and thought it was appropriate start with something kind of in honor of him. So
Wonderful, and it's an honor for me be able to do that.
Yeah, well, so thank you. Well, thank you. So maybe start with an icebreaker here with one of the things I like to, or I intend to do going forward, is having the guest choose a beverage to share. So if you could maybe tell us what you picked today.
Yeah, well, this is something that was kind of fun for me. This last summer in June of 2019, my older brother and I went down to Peru, and we backpacked for about a week and spent our last day at Machu Picchu. And while I was there, you know, it's one of the countries of the world that grows a lot makes a lot of chocolate. They grow the cacao plants from which cocoa and chocolate and so forth comes. And I don't know if you know anything about chocolate, but when the cacao grows on a tree, it's like in a pod, and there are all these seeds within it, and they actually roast the seeds kind of like you would with coffee, and there's these shells that are left over that don't go into the production of coffee. So they've taken the shells and they basically sell them in bags, and you make tea from it. And so it's essentially a chocolate tea, and that's what I've got right here out of my special stash at home that I brought back with me through customs, which was permitted.
Oh, nice. Yeah, great.
So
well,
hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
So, we should probably get into kind of a bio, and I can't do you justice after reading so much. It's so impressive. So maybe if you don't mind, just tell us a little bit. Well, we can start even from childhood and then kind of quickly through and
start where I graduated from preschool. So, I grew up in Hamilton, Ohio, which is a city in the southwest part of the state of Ohio. And my family there goes back multiple generations. And I didn't stray far from home to go to college. I went about 20 minutes from home to Miami University of Ohio. Mm. And then also didn't go far from home when I took my first job as ultimately ended up as a brand manager at Procter & Gamble. But after a few years of that, I decided that I really missed the academic environment. I thought I wanted to do something that perhaps had a little bit of a public policy feel to it. So I went off to Harvard's Kennedy School of Government for a couple of years to earn a master's degree in public policy. But while I was there, actually very early in the degree program, I kind of rediscovered my love of economics, which was one of my undergrad majors. And so decided to use the rest of my master's degree to prepare more to get a PhD in economics than to go into public sector work. And that's what I did. And then I was fortunate enough to get accepted at MIT, which was, meant I didn't have to move. And it was a great program, one of the best in the world in economics. Spent the next 4 years there. And then found my way back to the Kennedy School at Harvard on the faculty after I earned my PhD. But about 3 years into that, actually a little less than 2 years, actually, I got a call from Glenn Hubbard, who was an economist at Columbia, who had just been named the chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors for newly elected President George W. Bush. And he asked me if I would come down and work on retirement issues and Social Security reform. So I went down and spent about a year and a couple of months on that. By this point, I had a couple of really cute little girls who were, I think, 2 and 4 at the time. And my wife is also from Ohio. We wanted to get back to the Midwest to raise our kids. And I had a wonderful colleague from my PhD program by the name of Scott Weisbinner, who had joined the faculty here, and he convinced me to come and give a talk. So I ended up joining the Illinois faculty in 2002. I've been here ever since, and then was fortunate enough to be named dean in 2015. So that's nice. That's the quick version.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Seems like with the your work back in Washington, it seems like they it took a little while, but a lot of those actually came through. Maybe here recently, I was reading a little bit about the your opinions on annuities and how they could potentially have a place in retirement plans. I think that just went through on the
401k. That's right. There was in December of this last year, Congress passed and President signed what's known as the SECURE Act. And it actually is an acronym. I won't try to remember what it all stands for. But it's a fairly important and significant change in, doesn't do anything to Social Security, but it's an important change around private retirement plans. And really what a large part of it is designed to do, it's not the entirety of the legislation, is to provide kind of guaranteed lifetime income to people after they retire, which is what the old style defined benefit plans did. It's what Social Security does. But when the 401k and other defined contribution plans sort of came along, I could get into the whole history and I won't, but let's just say it.
I think you did dissertation.
It began as really a supplemental savings device, and over time, corporate America learned that it could be a good form of retirement savings more broadly, and it really started to displace the traditional defined benefit plan. But one of the weaknesses of the system, and I'm a fan of the system overall, is that once people got to retirement and they had a big lump sum of money, having to figure out how to take a lump sum of money and make it last over the rest of your life when you don't know how long you're going to live and you don't want what's going to happen with inflation and equity markets and so forth, that's actually a really hard exercise unless you have a product that allows you to convert it into monthly income that will last as long as you do. And that's what annuity products do. So I've done a lot of research over my lifetime. And some of that research was actually influential in some of what ended up in the SECURE Act. So, for example, now, going forward, I think it won't start till 2021 or maybe thereafter. But when people get their quarterly statements, instead of just saying, you've got $250,000 in your account, it will tell you what kind of monthly income that could provide for you in retirement. It's just meant to help give people a little bit better sense of how prepared they are and what other steps they can take.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I've spent a short amount of time looking at annuity products, and I get a fair number of people that ask me about investment advice just because I'm CPA and I'm the person in the in a big family of they ask kind of different questions, but I've always been very reluctant with annuities to recommend them because the fees historically, I think, have been quite opaque. So
yeah, and let me say that the industry has done itself, not any individual company, but the industry as a whole has kind of done itself a disservice over the years by having too many products that have the name annuity attached to them, and most of them are not what I'm talking about. When economists like me talk about annuities, what we're really talking about are products that provide lifetime income. And what we mean by that is it's essentially an insurance contract that says, all right, Drew, you buy this product, we're going to pay you so many dollars a month, and that money will continue to pay out to you every month for as long as you live. And then there's some bells and whistles you can add that, you know, if you want your wife to, you know, also be on the policy, it will continue as long as at least one of you is alive, and, you know, things like that. That's actually a really valuable form of insurance, because why do we save for retirement? In the first place, it's not to have a lump sum of money at age 65. It's to provide for our consumption in retirement. Annuities do that really well. And the simplest version of those products are terrific. They're fairly reasonably priced and so forth. The problem the industry has had is that a lot of insurers and others came out with products that were really just sort of glorified mutual funds, and they had some options embedded in them. And one of the options was, yeah, you can take lifetime income from it later if you want, but that's not what anyone was using them for. They were using it as a tax-deferred form of savings. And those are the products that tended to have really high fees, and there were some, you know, unfortunate episodes along the way where companies probably sold them to people for whom they weren't appropriate. And so the industry, the term annuity got a bad name. But the kind of products that I'm talking about and that the SECURE Act was really designed to support in qualified retirement plans are really what I would call the good kind of annuities, which are meaningful forms of insurance that make sure that no matter how long you live, you're going to have enough money to live on.
Right. Yeah, that's really interesting. One more question just on that. So I believe the legislation allows you to have annuity-type products in your 401k and probably other types of benefit plans, but do they now hold the trustees of the 401k plan to that same like fiduciary standard, or did that part change?
That's a great question. This is actually really important. One of the reasons that less than 10% of 401k plans in the U.S. have a lifetime income option built into the plan is because going way back to the 80s, the Department of Labor had initially decided that they should apply the same standard to the choice of the annuity provider as they would have done in a defined benefit plan from decades earlier. And that was such an impossibly high standard to meet because it was literally like you had to choose the safest annuity available, and no one knew what that meant. And there was always the risk that even if it seemed like the safest one available at the time you bought it, something could change, and by the time the person went to retirement, it wasn't anymore. And so corporations, plan sponsors, were very afraid about getting sued over that. And so it's one of the reasons that none of them but very few adopted them. What this legislation does is they still have a fiduciary standard, but it provides a safe harbor that if they follow certain steps, so they take into account the ratings of the insurance carriers, if they choose a company that is approved by that state's insurance regulator to provide products and a few other things, as long as you follow those steps and do your due diligence, you then get a safe harbor in that you cannot be sued if subsequently something happens to that company. So you're looking at it at the point in time and so forth. What consumers need to recognize is even in the very rare event that years later something did happen to the insurer, states have guarantee associations or guarantee funds. And to my knowledge, no one in America has ever lost money even on an annuity product, even when an insurer has gone under. There are mechanisms in place to provide some assurance around that. So it's a good system. This legislation should help a lot at reducing one of the barriers so companies no longer have to worry about getting sued over it.
Right. Yeah, well, thank you very much. It's
sure.
A little more technical than maybe.
Yeah.
That'll probably be as technical as the discussion.
I can go as technical as you want, but that's probably not what folks want to hear.
Yeah, no, I didn't mean my questions either. I mean the good content you provided in the answers. So thank you for that. So, so in terms of what's going on at the university and innovation, I know that the MBA program looks completely different. Probably, maybe even since you started as dean, right? It's been accelerating very much.
Yeah.
So, can you talk a little bit about what the Gies School of Business is doing to in the innovation front?
Yeah, so a lot is the short answer, and I'm going to give you some details. But let me just kind of paint the landscape, and then we can go as deep as you want on any one of them, including what we've done in the MBA space. So, You know, I became dean in summer of 2015. In January of 2016, we launched this really innovative IMBA program. It is a it was the first program in the world not to be online, but it was the first program to use what is called a MOOC platform, these massive open online course platform. And our partner in this is Coursera, which is a company out in California that was started by some former Stanford professors. And We built this really flexible, really engaging, high-value, high-quality, low-priced degree program, and we started that January with, I think it was about 112 students in that first cohort, and we have very quickly, in just 4 years, grown it from that brand-new program to having over 3,000 students in it today. Our online programs in the Geese College of Business are now as large as our undergraduate program. It is a global program in the sense that we have students from nearly 100 countries around the world. Having said that, it is still about a quarter of those students are from the state of Illinois. Something like 5 to 10% of them are from right here in East Central Illinois. So in terms of raw numbers, we're actually serving more East Central Illinois and Illinois residents than we ever did in our traditional graduate programs. But now in addition to doing that, we're also serving the world. And in that particular case, we refer to this as the democratization of education. And what do we mean by that? Think about what all the barriers are to, say, getting an MBA degree. Cost is a big one, right? There are MBA programs out there that will cost you, you know, in excess of $100,000 just in tuition. Ours is about $22,500 all in, the entire 2 years of the program. And second barrier that people add besides cost is you've got to quit your job to go do a traditional full-time residential program. And so if you think about it, the cost of giving up 2 years of work experience, 2 years of upward movement within your company, not to mention the fact that you're losing 2 years of salary, that cost is often larger than the tuition checks they're writing. And in our program, while it's very rigorous and it takes a serious amount of time and attention and dedication to do it, you don't have to quit your job. And our average student is about 37, 38 years old. They are very advanced in their career. They work for all the companies you've ever heard of, you know, the Apples and Microsofts of the world, as well as more traditional industries. We have physicians, we have law partners, we have engineers. I mean, it is a really impressive group. And the fact that they didn't have to quit their jobs, I mean, we've developed this incredible network of really high talent students who learn a lot from each other as well as from us. A third barrier, simply put, is geography, especially at people at that stage of life where, you know, they may have kids, they've got a spouse who has a job, they may own a home. You can do this program from anywhere in the world, and you don't have to pack up and move to Champaign, Illinois, or any other location to do it. This has also turned out to be really important for some of our international students. I think it was either our first or second cohort. We had a student from Afghanistan, and I can tell you, it would have been pretty – first of all, I couldn't have afforded a traditional program, and second of all, you would have had difficulty getting, the travel permissions from Afghanistan to be able to come here and do it, and he says the program changed his life. So, we're really all about smashing through barriers and making the program accessible to really highly qualified candidates. We're not sacrificing at all on quality. But it's allowing us to do it at scale in a way that I don't think any other school in the world comes close to. So that's a big, tangible example of our innovation. There's a lot of other things going on, whether it's what we do to support our own student entrepreneurs and innovators through our really successful iVenture Accelerator program that students go through a competition to become part of, and then we support them and their companies as they turn it into a real going business. Whether it's what we're doing educationally here with what we call our Migeli Office of Experiential Learning, which is really focused on giving every one of our students at the undergrad level and nearly all of our students at the graduate level an opportunity while they're a student here to work on a real live project with a real client. And that's, you know, to do that at the scale we're doing it, again, I don't think anyone else in the world is doing it. So those are a few examples.
Yeah, no, that's great.
And there's lot more as well.
Yeah, I would expect so. So the The fundraising efforts have been a big area of focus, I think, as well for you, right? And I'm sure the gift by Larry Geese and family has helped quite a bit. Are you finished with your immediate fundraising efforts? Or
we're not. I mean, first of all, we're never really finished because we always have wonderful things that we can do. One of my big priorities there is raising the funds that we need to make it so that any student who is good enough, qualified enough, worked hard enough to be able to be admitted to Geese, we want them to be able to come in spite of their family financial circumstances. And we've got a—I mean, we could raise a lot more money before we ever eliminate that entire gap. We announced a $300 million campaign just for the Geese College of Business. It is part of a $2.25 billion campaign for the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. We are north of 250. I have to look up exactly where we are today, but we're north of 250 toward our $300 million goal, and we still have a couple of years left, and so I'm confident we're going to be successful there. It will be by far the largest business school campaign we've ever had. I think the prior campaign that ended about a decade ago raised around $110 million. So this is a big jump up from that. And then honestly, we're probably going to keep raising money after that, not only for scholarships, but also because we're going to have need for expanding our physical facility footprint. We're going to continue to have needs for attracting the best faculty from all around the world, which we've been really successful at the last couple of years. But all those things take resources. And, you know, the business model of higher ed, especially here in Illinois, has changed pretty substantially. You know, back in the 1970s, like 70% of the budget of the university was provided by the taxpayer of Illinois. That's down to about 10% today. In the College of Business, it's even less than that. It's very small. And so we rely on innovative degree programs. We rely on philanthropy more than we ever did before. And so it's a really important part of what we do.
Are businesses stepping up as well and contributing? I know, I don't know if it was the last campaign or two before, the one before that, where I know a lot of like the big four firms, you know, contributed a fair amount, I think, to this building. In fact,
no, sure they did. And I mean, if you walk around this building, you'll see lots of plaques commemorating both corporate partners as well as individuals who donated very generously. It certainly includes many of the accounting firms, including the big four, but also including a number of other important partners, you know, like the Grant Thorntons of the world and so forth. We have also, though, had a lot of really important partnerships beyond the campaign that to help this building. So a few years ago, I think it was 2016 or 17, we announced a partnership with Deloitte and the Deloitte Foundation to establish a center for business analytics here at the University of Illinois, run out of the College of Business, that is really thinking about way that data science, data analytics is changing the face of business. And we received some very generous support from Deloitte for that. Axis Reinsurance Company made a very generous gift to support our efforts in the risk management space. And again, that's a program that we run here out of, we run an Academy of Risk Management here out of the Geese College of Business. It's open to students from across campus, actuarial science and so forth. I don't mean to exclude anyone, but there are a lot of important corporate partners that we work with on a regular basis in a way that I think really helps them and also helps support what we're doing. It's a wonderful symbiotic relationship.
Sounds great, man. It's nice to have those additional resources and be able to and think big, right, and have options on how to invest that.
Absolutely right. And we, when we're working with individual donors, we're primarily, trying to find out what's important to them as a donor philanthropically, and oftentimes they're motivated by. Sometimes it's we want to do whatever's best for the college. Sometimes it's, I really want to help a student in need, those kinds of things. When we work with companies, that is part of the conversation, but it's also part of, how can we use this strategically to help get the name of the company out or help them become identified with a certain theme or a certain topic. And our partnerships with companies are much beyond just the financial support. We have corporate representatives and alumni down here almost every day of the year, whether they're recruiting our students, whether they're speaking to classes, whether they're hosting events for us, providing facilities available, sometimes helping us provide some expertise on an issue that we're dealing with. And they're a really, really important part of our Geese family and community. And we couldn't do what we do without them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a big opportunity there also with the alumni network and kind of strengthening those bonds because, you know, I've been to a couple of events and they're still on the smaller side. So I think that kind of connecting to the professionals up in Chicago is probably one of your challenges and priorities, right?
Sure it is. And, you know, we have alumni all over the world, but there's no question that Chicago is sort of ground zero for where our alumni are, right? I don't know the exact percentages, but we literally have tens of thousands of Geese alumni in Chicago and probably hundreds of thousands of University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign in Chicago. So it's a really important area for us. It's also where a very large fraction of our undergrad students come from, is Chicago and in the Chicago suburbs. And I spent a lot of time up there. A lot of people from the team here spent a lot of time up there. And we have a lot of people from Chicago that come down here to really dedicate their time to helping us on campus. There's always more that we can do. And we're always looking for opportunities to innovate on that front and do things that are impactful, both at the college level as well as at the university level. You know, we hired a chief marketing officer for the campus, Eric Miner, who's an alum of the University of Illinois. He started something, I believe it was this past summer, you know, Illini Days in Chicago over mm-hmm. the summer. And I think the turnout at that was many times what they had anticipated. Mm. So, you know, we have our big spring luncheon event that brings about 1,000 alums out every year. So we've got a lot going on. We've got an amazing group of alumni leaders that lead our Geese Business Alumni Association. A lot of them are out of Chicago. But yes, we can always do more because we've got over 60,000 alumni around the world. And the more we can engage them, you know, the more we're going to be able to do to positively impact our students and frankly, the world.
Right. No, that's great. Well, hopefully we can make a small contribution right here in doing this. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
What other kind of top challenges do you have and are priorities for you kind of medium term?
So we're really, I'll stick with the online space for a moment, although it's certainly not the only thing we're working on, but I'll start with that, which is I believe that we as a college have the best capabilities of any university in the world in terms of doing meaningful, engaging education and working in groups and so forth, doing it remotely through our online capabilities. We've proven that through these phenomenal degree programs at which the students are really thrilled with the education they've gotten, with the network and so forth that they've built with their fellow students. Now what we're trying to figure out is how do we use that same technology and that same approach to stay engaged with all of our alumni for the rest of their lives, including those who can't come back to campus. You know, technology and business practices and everything is changing so rapidly that, you know, somebody that graduated from here 5 years ago may, at the time, probably didn't have business analytics training. And now we're providing it to every one of our students. But that means if you graduated very long ago at all, you may need to kind of upskill. You might need to come back for a refresher, get some new skills. Well, we'd love to be the place that our alumni and others as well, but certainly we want to be the place that our alumni feel that at any point in their life, their career, there's something new coming out. We have a vision of making this the place they want to come and do that, quite possibly without ever having to leave their home or office. That's going to take a lot of thoughtful planning and resources to realize, but that's something we're focused on. We're also looking to partner with companies in new ways, again, using some of our capabilities and technology and content, is to help companies who need to, like, upskill their entire workforce, right? And a lot of companies are out there spending a lot of money to do this on their own, and we think that we can be a really effective partner in some of that. At the undergrad level, we've had a really fun run in the last couple of years of planning and designing a new undergraduate curriculum here. I think it's going to be – I think it's the best in the world. Every year as a business student here, freshman through senior year, you have a shared experience course that everyone in the college – every undergrad in your grade or year will be taking the course at the same time, obviously in different sections. But in the first year, it's a focus on professional responsibility, the role of business and society, you know, a lot of big important issues, and also getting you thinking about what is your purpose? What are you looking to carve out with your career? What kind of impact do you want to have? And then sophomore and junior year, you're really going to learn to apply a whole set of skills. Sophomore year in working on some really sophisticated business simulations that allow you to bring a lot of this together. Junior year in a client-based project where you and a group of your peers will have a client that could be a Fortune 500 company, a local startup, you know, who knows, but you're going to be working on a real problem. And then senior year, there'll be a capstone that exposes you to kind of the more global business environment, but also revisits a lot of those early on concepts, including now is an opportunity for you to look back at what you thought you, where you thought you wanted to take your career. Now let's use this as another pivot point to think about, you know, what impact you want to have on the world. We talk a lot about business on purpose. It's kind of our brand. It's the essence of who we are. It's about being intentional about everything. It is about having a bigger impact than just the bottom line. And we're really trying to infuse that into everything we do now, including our undergrad curriculum. And so this coming year is an important year for us to really think about implementing and operationalizing, executing that, because the students that we have on campus now are going through this new core, and we're really scaling it up and ramping it up. So that's another exciting area for us.
Has the state's fiscal situation impacted the Geese School, and if so, how?
Yeah, so my first year as dean corresponded to the first year of the big budget stalemate that the that Illinois had when Governor Rauner was still in office, and then my second year as dean was the second year of that budget stalemate. On the one hand, we as a college were fortunate in that we don't get that much of our money from state taxpayer dollars, and so we were able to continue to do a lot of what we did. That doesn't mean we were unfazed by it, because you know, the university as a whole went for a very long period of time without receiving any state appropriations. And even though they eventually filled in some of that, I mean, at the end of the day, I think the university ended up short something like $250 million relative to what they had thought. And so we all had to make some adjustments. And I think every college, every unit on this campus had to, you know, disinvest from some things or slow some things down. We were in a fortunate position, thanks to our generous donors and corporate partners, that we could continue to make some strategic investments. So we were building our online capabilities during that time. We had to, you know, we knew that we might have to dig into some of our reserves to do that, but we knew it was the right thing to do in the long term. So we've actually emerged from all of that, I think, stronger than we've ever been. It gave us a yet another reason to be very clear and intentional and focused on what our strategy is, what was really going to create value for our students, for our alumni, what was going to differentiate us from the competition. And then around all the time that got resolved, Larry and Beth Geese came along with their incredible generosity and really kind of added some rocket fuel to what had already been a really successful launch. And it's not to say that we don't need resources. We do. We rely very heavily on philanthropy, but I'm very happy with where we are and the trajectory that we have.
Did I hear right that was the fourth largest gift to a business school in
U.S. history? Yeah. You know, there were a few that were larger, and we can quibble over some cases where maybe somebody gave multiple gifts over time that added up to more than that. But no matter how you look at it, it was an enormous gift. It was a very generous gift. And as I often say, what Larry and Beth gave us was more than $150 million. They gave us a sense that a really successful business family had determined that they believed in our vision and who we are, and they wanted to invest in it. They gave us a name and an identity. We were, I think, the only top 20 business school that didn't have a name associated with it yet. It just was really a boost of confidence and enthusiasm and excitement. And the other thing it brought is they're just wonderful partners. I mean, they love spending time with our students, and our students love spending time with them. Larry has been a very successful business leader because he's got a very strategic mind, and we have great conversations, and he helps me think about things a little differently. And but he always starts and ends every conversation by saying, "But you know, it's your decision. I invested in you, and meaning the college, and I trust your leadership, and I'm happy to talk through things. But at the end of the day, I'll respect whatever you do. I mean, you can't ask for a better partner than that."
Yeah, right? No, so, that's great. Really game changing, obviously.
Sure was. So. Yeah.
Okay, sounds good. Is there anything else you'd like to share? I guess one thing.
That's always dangerous to ask. Well. Dangerous. I have a lot of fun things I can talk about in this college. Well. I mean, let me take advantage of the opportunity to say one thing that we've been investing in is our people. And what do I mean by that? In order to support all of this amazing stuff that we're doing, we need really talented staff, and we need really talented faculty. And we've been enormously successful at both. If you look at our faculty count over the last 5 years, we've increased our faculty size from about 140 to about 190 faculty, a growth of 50 faculty members. That is unheard of, right? And we were able to do that in part because of online programs, in part because of philanthropy. And we've hired some really exceptional people. I mean, you get this positive momentum when you start hiring faculty. People want to be a place that's growing and doing exciting stuff. So that's been great. But I also want to underscore, equally importantly, are the amazing staff that we have hired, including, you know, the people that you see around you here in this studio and that you don't see from behind the screen, which is we have built out an incredible set of expertise in marketing and communications and online and e-learning and media and all of the things that it takes to run this really creative and innovative online business and educational set of activities that go along with it. Again, also only made possible because of the innovative new programs that have generated new revenue through private philanthropy and so forth. So that's something that's really, really exciting.
Yeah, that's great. So if folks want to learn more, I'm sure the website's a great place to start. Anywhere else?
Absolutely. I mean, the website, follow us on social media. We have a pretty active social media set of activities out there. We're on Twitter, we're on LinkedIn, we're on Facebook, we're on all the other ones that I'm not on. Those are the ones that I use pretty frequently. If you're not getting emails from our college, if you're an alum or a corporate partner, we do have information that we email out to people, kind of a newsletter, those sorts of things. We call it Geese Quarterly. And if you're not on that, it probably just means we don't have an updated email address for you. And let us know what that is. We've got a lot of great stories to tell here, and we're always looking for the opportunity to tell it. And we'd love for more people to follow us and stay engaged with what's going on.
Yeah, that's great. Well, exciting stuff. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. I'm honored to be part of this, and I appreciate you coming down here to take the time to do it.
Yeah, so, great.
Good.
Thank
All you. Right. You bet.
Yeah.